You're listening to Vet Candy.
Hi, this is Dr. Jessica Turner, and you are listening to Living Well with Dr. Jessica. This is your one stop for everything health and wellness related, and I am not just talking about working out and eating right, you guys. I'm talking about everything in between. And part of that, if you've listened to any of our previous podcasts, is all about making time for yourself. And so if you notice that there was a little absence in our shows, that was exactly what I was doing. I was relaxing at the beach with my family, completely unplugged, and it was glorious. I'm excited to be back. I'm excited to introduce today's guest. It is going to be covering a topic that is a little out of my comfort zone, to be honest with you guys, but it's something that not only do I need, but I feel like everybody else is in need of it as well. And just to give you a little glimpse, it's finances. So we're going to go deeper into that, but I first want to introduce our guest. We have Rosh Raheja. He is a husband, a father, advocate, entrepreneur, and a CFO. He has spent 15 years building his expertise in entrepreneurial healthcare. He has built a dental organization to be the fourth largest in the country, scaled a veterinary consolidation firm sevenfold in 3.5 years, and has co-founded My Vet Group, a veterinary-first organization that focuses exclusively on representing veterinarians. In a nutshell, you guys, they help you see the value in your practice and find someone who is a good match to acquire it while securing your retirement. Who doesn't need that, right, within our field? So please help me with welcoming Rosh Raheja. Y'all, the running joke is that I was going to mess up his name, and I was doing so good, but y'all help me welcome him in.
Thanks so much, Dr. Turner. Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, and I appreciate being on here and flexing our financial muscle today. So I look forward to it.
So needed. So I was sharing with Rosh yesterday that finances has always been kind of this thing that, like, I know it's important, but for a while I ran with the ignorance is bliss concept or mindset around it. Thankfully, I'm married to someone that does enjoy numbers and takes care of our finances. But I remember getting out of school and thinking, okay, we had like literally 2 hours of anything talking about finances. And here I am in the real world, first job, buying a house, moving back home, getting married, and starting practice. And I have no idea how to tackle, you know, student loans, especially when a lot of us get out of school not making, you know, what we need to match that. It's kind of a terrifying feeling when you start having to be an adult for real and take control over your finances in that setting. And so I know our main focus today is going to be geared more towards our veterinary colleagues that are interested or considering buying a practice, asking those questions on if it's something they could even do. But I want to start with something that all of our listeners could benefit from, whether you're just getting out of school or you've been out for a while, or maybe you're somewhere, you know, in between and you're already like, oh, finances. Yeah, I need more of that in my life, but I don't even know where to start. What's one simple thing that you could give our listeners right off the bat as something that they could start doing to kind of take control over their finances?
The biggest thing to create, you know, and I know the topic today is financial fitness and buying practices, but I think the biggest thing you can give yourself from a peace of mind perspective is understanding where your money goes, right? We have this thing in finance, which is follow the cash, right? And so if we can understand where cash is going and how cash is coming in and how cash is leaving, the biggest thing is you get mental sanity out of it. So maybe put in a cleaner way is just the concept of budgeting. Just take an approach. There's so many tools out there today, actually. There's these apps that are so helpful, actually. You plug in your credit card information and your credit card information flows right in. Your salary information from your bank flows right in. And it's a quick and easy way just to see, okay, I brought in X amount of cash this month, and this is how much cash I paid out in my credit card bills and my utility bills. And this is what I have left, and this is what I'm putting into savings. It's actually really, really quick and easy in today's world with the technology that we have from apps. We take advantage of it and get ourselves some mental sanity through this process. Just taking 5 minutes of budgeting, and we do it in our household too. So I'm totally drinking my Kool-Aid here because, you know, having been CFO, my wife just assumes that I'm the de facto CFO of the house too. And you know, we know she's the CEO. Let's just call a spade, so I have to play the de facto CFO. And so managing that through financing, she'll come and ask me, so, you know, how much did we spend this month? And I'll have to be like, oh my gosh, I got to get my stuff together here. But it's really nice to have the app quickly. So we quickly, you know, juggle through it and see where our money went this month. And you'll be surprised. We'll be surprised how much Raj spent on coffees this month.
Right? Yeah, I completely agree. And I know that was the first thing my husband and I implemented out of school. He's a pharmacist. We both got out at the same time. We both had a ton of student debt. And like I said, we came back home, bought a house, but just were thrown into this, like, having to factor all of this money and having to make sure that we could pay the mortgage and, you know, all of these things. And at the first time actually having money coming in, which is a slippery slope. I feel like when you get out of school and it's like, hallelujah, I got a job and somebody's paying me to do what I've been doing for free, it's very easy to spend it without realizing where it's going. And that, I mean, we were guilty of that for a while until we downloaded one of those apps. And I have to laugh because when we first went to do it, we were so paranoid about putting in our information because it literally is that easy. You just plug in some numbers and they pull up everything. And we were like so paranoid that somebody was going to like steal our information. So we put it off, but then we finally did it. And we've been using that resource for years. And like you said, I could easily go to him a couple times a month. We'll talk finances for like maybe 5 minutes. You guys, it's not like you got to have a financial meeting weekly, but it's just been such a huge asset and has allowed us to be able to pay off our student debt in a way that has allowed us to have way more freedom now. And so I hope everybody that's listening takes the time to do that.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Do you have a surgery story? Veterinary Instrumentation believes that every veterinary professional has a story to tell. Whether it was the first time you held a scalpel in your hands or the time you missed a concert to assist with an emergency C-section. If you have a surgery story to tell, tag @MyVetCandy, #SurgeryStories to enter to win some great prizes, including FIGS gift cards, courtesy of Veterinary Instrumentation. Real people, real life, real stories. Check out myvetcandy.com/rules for rules and regulations. This program is brought to you by Veterinary Instrumentation, makers of OR quality surgical instruments. VI instruments are backed by an industry-leading warranty and designed to exceed your precise quality, ergonomic, and utility needs. Check out veterinaryinstrumentation.com for more information.
Shifting into the meat of what we're going to talk about today with buying a practice, I am a part of a phenomenal veterinary community online. I think there's like 14,000 of us in there. And because we know our field is so highly represented by females now and a lot of us having families, it is a group that's specific to veterinary moms. And so I hopped in there last night and kind of asked, you know, where do you fit? And I gave them three categories: have absolutely no interest in buying a practice and give me your reasoning why. I've thought about it, but I haven't taken the leap. And I asked what would have to happen for them to take that leap. And you already own a practice. And what do you wish you would have known beforehand? And I was convinced it was going to be so one-sided with people not being interested. And that's what the answers were at first. I'm in the one group, and it was primarily concerned with work-life balance and finances because so many of us do have, you know, this student debt load and our income's just not matching it. And it just seems incomprehensible to be able to even think about it. I had some that were like, I haven't even looked at the numbers because I don't even want to know. And that was probably the biggest factor that was holding back that middle category that was on the fence. They have that desire. They have that want. They're terrified of getting into it and realizing I had to sacrifice my family. I'm having to sacrifice, you know, our financial stability. So I think it would just be such a wonderful way to move into things to say, okay, if you are thinking about it at all, or maybe you've stopped thinking about it and you feel like it's too late, you know, like you haven't gotten your ducks in a row, like right out of the back from school, because maybe that wasn't your plan. What kind of advice would you give for starting, or like, what does it mean, you know, to start early, earlier than later? And what does that process kind of look like?
Yeah, I don't think enough can be said about starting early. And what does starting early actually mean? Usually that's just conversations, you know, sitting down with colleagues that already own practices, sitting down with colleagues that are thinking of owning practices, sitting down with people in the veterinary community, but outside of just the veterinarians, sitting down with people that are CPAs to the veterinarians, that are lawyers to the veterinarians, right? Seeing if you can track those people down and talk to them on what they're seeing. And how, and the stories that they've heard from their side. Because oftentimes, it's usually the people on the outside too that have heard all the war stories that have taken place and you know, what worked and what didn't work. For me, starting early has always meant talking to lots of people, understanding sort of what that actually entails. I think the best thing you can do is get your mindset set of what it's going to look like when you own a practice and potentially what are ways to do that and who's open to that those ideas. So for me, it's really come from that perspective. And don't recreate the wheel. I think that's the biggest thing, right? Like leverage off the people that are already around you. Leverage off the people in your network. Listening to podcasts like this one is a great way to understand how other people are feeling about veterinary ownership, right? So those kinds of conversations are important because you hear one thing. And I think too often sometimes the conversation is one-sided where, you know, debt is holding me down or I'm not able to sleep at night because entrepreneurship is driving me crazy and I can't handle it. But there are other people that have been very successful on the other side, right? People that have ownership and entrepreneurship and they own 5 practices. They own 10 practices. Well, I mean, how are they doing it? I draw this from the world because we see this all the time. We've got Elon Musk out there, right? And I adore the guy too. And so, you know, but he's running 5 companies, right? Like, how is it even possible? How does someone run Tesla, SpaceX, Boring, all the other companies that he's involved in? How does he do that? I mean, you have to have some level of need and want to be in that space and some level of work-life balance that needs to come by hiring all the right people around you. So there are people that have been successful in there. And I think it's important to talk to just as many people on the other side as the people on the other side that are saying, hey, this is crazy. So I think those conversations are very important to get started early.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I could see that happening in this message thread. You know, there was a decent amount of people that were in that ownership position and were very happy that they were enlisting, you know, the benefits of the financial stability that does come with it. And, you know, some of those tips, like you said, like hiring the right people, so many people stressed bookkeeping, you know, your CPA and your practice consultants, and there's all these different resources that you could outsource that kind of take some of that responsibility and some of that burden that I think a lot of veterinarians go into ownership and the idea of ownership carrying when we don't necessarily have to. And I think that's kind of the key to running any business, really, is just seeing, okay, what can I hire out? What are the different things out there that successful business owners, practice owners are utilizing that I can maybe get more information on and maybe learn a little bit more about how I can actually achieve some work-life balance. And it may not be as much of the responsibility that I'm assuming. It makes me think of just when we worry in general, so many times we're worrying about things that like aren't even going to happen or, you know, it's just not even a possibility or it's like tenfold. And I think you could easily apply that to the idea of practice ownership. And it's kind of like a monster that really isn't a monster at all, if that makes sense.
I think oftentimes we're worried about the small percentage of people that have said it's a terrible idea. And for some it is. For some, they're just not ready for it or it's just not for them. And that's okay. But again, you know, a key component also is remembering that you don't have to own the entire business, right? You can be a minority owner, you could be a partial owner, you can own 5% of the business and have a great conversation with the owner and be part of the strategic conversations on growing practices, right? 5% of a large pie makes a lot of sense rather than always owning 100% of a very small pie. So, you know, it's important to sort of think about it in that context too.
That makes so much sense. You're kind of bringing me to my next thought. There's a lot of people that I think are unaware of these like in-betweens. And so they kind of, oh, I wish I could, you know, have more say-so, but not have all the responsibility, that kind of thing. And there was a few that I know if I were still in practice, the setup would have been, and I don't know that I would have ever went forward with buying it, but I was associate in a practice with an older veterinarian that sooner or later was going to want to retire. And it would automatically be kind of first dibs if I wanted it because I was the one that had been there the longest and I didn't, you know? And so it kind of passed on to the other person. And so now it's kind of transitioned from part owner to full time ownership. And I think people may be aware of that, but they don't really know what that looks like or like how to go about doing that transition in a manner that is good. You know, there was somebody that had like a horror story of this particular situation and I'm like, oh no, she's going to scare everybody else. Like, I wonder what happened, you know, but I think there's a right way to do it. And so if you can maybe elaborate on that for our listeners, I think they would.
You know, I'm going to take actually one big giant step back. And I think this point is super important for everyone listening right now that is a veterinarian, right? Or is wanting to be a veterinarian or is in school and coming out of veterinary school. They need to know and recognize that veterinarians are in the driver's seat, right? In today's market with the entrepreneurs that we're speaking with, and I've been speaking with almost the last 5 years, the greatest challenge for them has been finding qualified vets. There are consolidators that we're actually talking to right now. They have armies of recruiting agents to go find veterinarians because they can't find qualified veterinarians. They are going into the UK. They're flying their people, their teams from the UK to go find qualified veterinarians and bringing them over. That's how desperately we need veterinarians here in the US. I'll start it with there because I really want the listeners to know that veterinarians are in the driver's seat. So there's the US labor stats is saying that veterinary demand is supposed to grow by 16% between now and 2029. And if you contrast that with all the other medical professions and professionals, they're only supposed to grow by 4% between now and 2029. So the demand for veterinarians is four times larger than any of the other professions out there right now. And so knowing that you're in the driver's seat, and of course being humble about it, you realize you can make some asks, you can make some demands, you can ask for these types of things that today's market is offering. Today's market is offering large signing bonuses for veterinarians to sign on. They're offering tuition reimbursements. They're offering opportunities for joint ventureship. And so maybe to now step into the question, you know, how do you start that conversation? Well, I think the first thing is when you step into an associate's shoes at a practice, if you choose to go to a practice, if you're stepping into an associate's shoes, first and foremost, make sure it's the right culture. Do you want to be there for the long term? Do you want to be there for the next 5-10 years of your life? Right? Can you see yourself being there? If not, find a practice that makes sense for you and start the conversation early with the owner that, hey, I would like to be, you know, I would like to be an owner, even if it's a partial owner to start the conversation off with, I'd like to do that. And more often than not, more people are willing to share that load. I mean, who wouldn't want to share that heavy load of carrying the practice that, hey, you'll help me out? Great. You want to be like an owner? Great. And I think the next important thing is outside of voicing it, is acting like an owner, right? Be part of that strategic conversation with the owner. Be part of that marketing conversation. How do we grow the practice? How do we develop this? Be part of that conversation though, so they can understand that, hey, you truly do want to be, you truly are thinking like an owner. What are some cost saving techniques you're thinking about, right? You're acting as if before you step into the shoes to really, really prove yourself to that owner. So I think that's a great place to start from an associate perspective, recognizing you are in the driver's seat, you know, being humble about it, of course, but recognize that there is a large demand for great qualified skill sets, people that know good medicine. There's a very large demand for them. And so be forefront and it's okay to ask, right?
Yeah. It's crazy because it was the opposite when I got out of school.
Yeah.
There was no jobs. Like, you were lucky if you got, you know, the baseline, at least around where I was. And it's encouraging to hear there's a demand because, I mean, a lot of us were getting out of school. Like, what are we going to do now? Because there's nowhere to work, which is a really scary thought. But especially like you talking about acting like an owner. And I want to share quickly before we take a break. Even if you're listening and you're like, but I have absolutely no desire to own a practice, because that's where I was, you guys. I watched my dad run a pediatrics practice in town and I never saw him. And so I knew that was just something I didn't want. And I don't know. I know I'm not the only one in that those shoes. And I just never was willing to kind of work around an alternative, because there are, you know, like you said, it's a mindset thing. But I always took a lot of pride in my role as an associate, and I was very involved. I was lucky to be able to be very involved in bringing in new products and trying out new procedures and, you know, just bringing value to the clinic as an owner, even though I wasn't an owner and didn't have the desire to be. And the reason I'm sharing that is because it was leverage for when I felt like it was time to ask for a raise. And my dad has always taught me, do your job in a way that makes you irreplaceable. And so kind of always have that motto. And so I was able to go to my boss and present, like, this is what I want. And this is why I think, you know, you should consider it. And he went forward with giving me what I asked for, you know. And I do think a big part of that was because I've always treated the practice like it was my own, even though it's not my own. So I just wanted to share that and kind of give you something to think about. But we will take a quick break and we'll be right back and we'll dig a little bit deeper into if you could take the leap and buy in that practice.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey, this is Dr. Quincy Hawley, and I'm here to tell you about a new show. It's Vet Candy Rounds with the Hawleys. That's right, Dr. Tierra, the love of my life, and I have teamed up to bring you the most fascinating cases in the world. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify, or a podcast platform of your choice, only on Vet Candy Radio.
All right, everyone, we are back. We are with Raj, and we are digging into practice ownership and if that is something that you can do and how to go about making that a reality. I know one of the biggest obstacles that were coming up in this thread that I started last night was, I want to own a practice, but like, I don't even know how that's feasible or how that's possible with the financial aspect of it. And I know we kind of just talked about part ownership. And so that's one thing that seems like, you know, an obvious way to ease into ownership without so much of a, you know, financial burden per se. But what if you have someone that maybe that's not an option and they have this dream of owning a practice of their own, and, you know, that's their biggest obstacle that they're trying to get past is the financial aspect.
So you're talking about potentially opening up your own practice, right? Like starting as a single practice owner and branching out, which in actually today's market, we've actually seen a lot of that. In fact, in speaking with a lot of the vendors, like IDEX specifically, we were just talking and they were talking about how, in addition to practices going offline to the consolidator, so to speak, there were just as many practices starting. So it is happening today, and there are associates that are taking that leap. They are going out and starting their own practice. And I think that's a wonderful thing. They need to do that. And so just maybe give a fun fact from a debt and financial perspective. I think it's important for people to understand that, you know, practice ownership, yes, is not for everyone, 100%. But I think you need to begin with the end in mind, right? Why do you want to own your practice? What is driving you? Is it financial freedom? Is it the ability to guide medicine? Is it the ability to be your own boss? Is it the ability to set your own hours? Like, what is driving you to practice ownership? And I think that's very important to outline and list up front to understand why you want your own practice. And sometimes it's just for the pride of it, right? I have my practice and I can feel good about that I've started something that is mine, that's out there and doing good for the people, doing good for all the pets, doing good for all the pet parents. And so that's power to you. That's what you need to use as your driver as you go through entrepreneurship, because there are going to be a lot of obstacles. That is absolutely the case. No entrepreneurship is coming without hurdles. And I think the important part to remember there is there is the ability through entrepreneurship to have work-life balance. And that begins with, you know, honestly, a support structure at home. So between my wife and I, as one person is working, one person is going through entrepreneurship, there are challenges to get through, and you need that support structure. You need that village around you to be able to help, not just with the kids, but also with the concept that you may end up being away a little bit more than you want to be initially as you start to build that business. And so as you kind of think through that, driving a lot of the mindset to go out and open your own practice, the big thing there is to make sure that you don't start off too significantly in debt. Practice ownership, you want to buy all the capital equipment, you want to build out your business. There are ways to do it. The banks will support you through that process because they love what veterinarians do and they understand that it does get paid off very well. So the banks will support you, your friends and family will support you, and there are lots of financiers out there that will support you. And so maybe at the end of this, please feel free to touch base as well if you need some guidance on that in terms of connecting with financiers. But there are lots of people out there that are willing to support you if you want to step out into entrepreneurship. As you get there and as you begin that journey, understanding what's driving you, you know, that's when it's important to take into account work-life balance. Does it make sense to do all the specialties in-house? You know, too often as I'm talking to entrepreneurs right now, part of what's driving them crazy is all the back-end support, all the administrative stuff that they have to stop and do. That's what holds them up at night, right? They're fine working with the patients, the pet parents, you know, and writing up notes. But what drives them nuts is now I have to do all the accounting. I have to do all the paying the bills. I have to do all the HR. I have to do all the recruiting. And there are specialties out there that do that for you. Yes, it costs money, but what is your time worth? What is your work-life balance worth? And I think it's important to put that into perspective. It's important to recognize that, okay, I'm going to outsource accounting. I'm going to have a bookkeeper do my books, and that's okay. It's okay if I spend $1,000, $2,000 a month having a bookkeeper do the books and payroll and pay the bills and outsource those specialties so you can do what you're good at. With one of the companies that I was building, we had an investment advisor, and he had a saying that I absolutely loved: highest and best use. Is what he kept telling us. Raj, what's your highest and best use, right? Understanding that you have 8 to 10 hours a day, and where should I spend my time? Should it be on bookkeeping? I didn't go to school for that, so I don't need to do that. And it's the highest and best use of your time. So,
yeah, I agree 100% on wrapping your mind around your time being worth money. And I think we know that. I mean, we see that in translation as, you know, time spent in exam rooms and things like that. But when we think about outsourcing, and not even talking about specifically within veterinary medicine, I talk myself out of hiring someone to come clean all the time because it's like, but I work from home, I could clean my house, you know, but it's like, well, that's not the point though. It's the time that it would free up. And it's the same thing. And so I think even going into the process of purchasing and considering those numbers as part of that, you know, may make it less daunting, knowing, okay, this is going to be an essential part of ownership and helping me maintain that work-life balance that I'm so afraid to lose. And that way, it's you don't even have a chance to talk yourself out of it. It's just done already.
I was just going to say, we have to be frank about the profession too, right? This is a female-led profession. 60% of all veterinarians out there are females. 80% of graduating vets are females, right? This is a female-centric profession. And we have to understand, I mean, you contrast that with back in the 70s, you had 90% of your graduating class being males, right? I mean, it is completely flipped on its head. And yet they did this survey, and this was back in 2015, but I'm sure the numbers are very similar based on your survey that you just did, where they asked the graduating class, you know, what's your aspiration? What's your desire to own a practice? And only 30% of the class said, yeah, I'd want to eventually own the practice. I mean, that's basically what your survey said, right? 1 in 3, that's basically where we were. So, I mean, it's interesting to see that. But I think if you see that you can achieve work-life balance through practice ownership and financial freedom, let's not forget, the practice owners make 4 times as much on average than an associate, right? Your average associate, your average salary on the US labor statistics is $100,000. That's your average salary of an associate. And your average practice owner, don't get me wrong, I've seen practice owners go anywhere from $200 to $1.5 million a year. That's their take home. And so the average between there has been $400,000. So there is a significant financial incentive to do what you're doing. And it's okay if out of that $400,000, you paid a couple $1,000 for someone to do your accounting, your bookkeeping, your HR, your payroll, because you still walk away with work-life balance. You still walk away with some level of sanity. And I don't think, you know, even if you paid $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 a year for those types of services, you walk away with your sanity. I think that's still worth a lot for people.
Yeah. I want to circle back to 2 things before we get too far from it. I think it's so smart when we're talking about the work-life balance to utilize your tip or question on getting very clear on why do you want to own a practice in the first place, and literally listing those out and keeping that front and center. And that could be your backbone of things that need to have maybe your, you know, highest attention when it comes to outsourcing or whatever it may be. You know, if you're afraid of being at work late because you don't want to have to stay and do some of those extra things, then even more so you need to hire someone out to do it. They didn't want to give up the freedom of being able to leave work and be home and like leave work at work. As an owner, they feel like you're never going to get away from that. But I think if you go into ownership saying, okay, these are my non-negotiables for myself, I do not want to be on vacation and having to answer to anyone, you know, and that's a valid concern. And a lot of people voice that. But I think you could put people and systems into place to where you have someone for your staff to go to when you're away, and like the clinic's not going to catch on fire, you know, like it's not going to be the end of the world. And so kind of reverse engineering why you want to own and use that, you know, to help you kind of safeguard your balance at home, I think is really smart. And then I'm trying to keep my second thought from when you were wrapping things up, but we know the logistics. Okay, I want to own. I know there's people out there that are going to help support me, that are going to make it, you know, a reality financially if I want to. You know, like you said, you know, the banks care about what we do, and there's people out there that want to see us opening and thriving in these things. But I think so many are still stuck in this reality of, I don't earn enough to even pay, you know, my student debt off type mindset. And so they're like, I can't pull the trigger with, you know, taking out a loan to become part owner or whatever it may be. I don't know if you have any tips for those people that are kind of stuck there where they're just like, they're afraid to take the gamble financially because that's how they feel it is. They feel like they're, you know, going to Las Vegas and just throwing money and I hope it works.
No, if I was to give advice on that. So if I was a practicing or graduating veterinarian, I'll give my own opinion. And this is certainly my 2 cents on it. If I was a graduating veterinarian, the first thing I would do, much like I did with my CPA, right? I want to go and make sure I get appropriate training and work with a doctor and be an associate somewhere where I can see what business is like before I go and buy a business right off the bat out of a graduating class. And so if I was a graduating veterinarian in today's market, I would, understanding that we are in high demand, I would go out there and get a tuition reimbursement program. There are practices right now in today's market that are desperate for qualified veterinarians and will do a tuition reimbursement program. They'll put you on a 3-year program to say, come work with us for the next 3 years and we will pay off your tuition. Your tuition is done. Zero. After 3 years, it's nothing. You have nothing to pay off your tuition. All you have to give us is 3 years of your time, and we will still give you a market salary. It's not like we're going to drop your salary. It's still a competitive, very highly competitive salary, and we'll pay off your debt. Or we'll give you a massive signing bonus for coming working with us. Or we'll help you put you on a path and a program to help you buy into the clinic. So there are many options available right now to quickly get that debt decimate it, get it out of there. And that's where I would start. I would start by getting as much of the debt and clear the deck as quickly as possible, as much as possible, and make that my primary focus. Using those budgeting tools, those apps that we talked about at the top, you know, make sure that you're cognizantly working towards driving that number down. That needs to go away. And once you get financial control over your debt, that's when you can think about, okay, I've got the training I needed. My debt's under control. Now I can think about, I potentially want to step out and own my own practice, or I kind of like where I am and I'd like to keep this practice that I am, and I want to be a minority or a majority stakeholder in that practice. And that's how I would really think about it. You know, this is not a short-term plan. This is a 3 to 5 year plan at minimum. And you want to think about it that way. I think too often, if we think about this in terms of how do I get my debt paid off, you know, relatively quickly, I think, you know, you run into sort of, you know, poor decision-making, in my opinion. I don't think you've considered very much of the long-term, and I think it's appropriate to do that. So when you think about it from that perspective, you can get your debt to a manageable level and then think about stepping outside and starting your own practice and potentially taking on more debt. Because remember, student debt is not the only thing you're paying off. You're hopefully at that point, right? You've got a mortgage, or you've got a husband, you've got kids, you've got a family you need to support. So those are other things you need to consider. So if someone can help you pay off your debt, why not?
Take and run it. Yeah. That is mind blowing to me, to be honest. That, because I mean, I've been out of practice for a while now. And so I had no clue that, you know, there were practices that were offering programs such as this. And I think it's wonderful, because I know that is one of the biggest burdens that our profession carry. And so I hope we have people listening that were kind of like in the dark like me and are listening like, what? You know, like that's possible. Because man, I mean, if you don't consider that, you know, if you're in that situation, that's just huge to be able to set yourself up for success down the road.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Put the needle on the record.
Vet Candy Life is a talk show hosted by well-being gurus Dr. Quincy Hawley and Renee Michelle. Each episode features expert tips, lifestyle advice, and real-life experiences from the most interesting people in the world. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and more.
When you were talking, the whole time I was thinking, okay, if I were still in practice, I'm 11 years out, I don't have any more student debt, thank God, but I've been here for so long. My salary is this, you know, I get a little raise here and there, but like, I had no idea that the stats are so different with what new grads are making because of the high demand, but I feel like I'm stuck with being able to really ask for more without asking, you know, for ownership opportunities. I don't know if you have any advice with that, but that's what I was thinking the whole time. Like, what if I were in my shoes, if I were still practicing, and I'm over here like, I love where I work, but I'm not making what these new grads are even making. You know, like, how do I go about possibly positioning to be an advocate for myself? I know this is totally off topic, but I just feel like there's people listening that are in that situation that are like, I wish I was a new grad, like, but I don't want to leave my practice. You know, do you have any tips on...
No, I mean, that's a great point. I think, you know, because market forces sort of take hold. And so maybe if I can paraphrase back, what I hear you saying is, what if you're in a role today, you're, you know, 5 years since you're graduated, and obviously all the perks that are available to new grads today were not available to me because I graduated 5 years ago. How do I get back and how do I take advantage of the market forces that are taking place today? And it really starts with conversation, having an open and transparent dialogue with the practice owner that's there today is saying, hey, you know, this is what I'm hearing in the market. You know, it may or may not be true. I'm not sure, but I really would feel like my market compensation should be X. Honestly, and I know it sounds sometimes terrible, but go look. It's okay to talk to other practices and go see what the market is willing to offer you. It's not that you need to come back and leverage that with your existing owner, but at least you know what you're worth. And I say this all the time from a valuation perspective, as we do this with my vet group, right? You know, even with your house, you may not want to sell your house, but it's very important to know what it's worth, right? I bought it for X and today it's worth Y. I don't care to sell it, but at least I know what it's worth and where it's at. Oftentimes, that's just that conversation, right? Understanding sort of what you're worth. And I think too often as veterinarians, we don't value our own time and effort very well, right? And it's important to do that. If you know what market forces are providing today, go get a quote. Go see what's out there and get a sense of it. And then you feel more confident, I think, asking. And again, there's a poor way to ask. I think it's important not to ask in poor taste of like, hey, if you don't give me a raise, I'm leaving for this guy. But I think the important thing is to say, look, I think today's market is really asking, you know, X percent from the veterinarians, and I think I need to be there. And, you know, there are many ways to pay veterinarians, right? They pay them as pro sal, they pay them on salary, they pay them hourly, they pay them part-time. There's so many different ways to do it. Be creative with the practice owner. Make it so that it's a two-way dialogue on like, hey, I'm happy to work harder. I'm happy to work with you on the medicine, but really I'd like you to add this to my percentage. And really it's for me. If the harder I work, the higher it goes, and I'm willing to do that. And I think showing that two-way dialogue makes that conversation so much better than just coming in with a leverage dialogue of I'm just gonna keep doing what I'm doing, but you just gotta pay me more to do it. And I think that's a tough dialogue to have.
I think that's such sound advice. And I hope our listeners that maybe do feel a little stuck, they like where they're stuck, but they feel stuck, maybe feel like they could, you know, get off of here and have some action steps themselves along with those that are looking, you know, to buy. So I would like to kind of wrap things up with just getting your thoughts. You've mentioned a few times throughout our discussion about consolidation within the industry. And I'd just like to kind of get your thoughts on that and what's driving that and what you're seeing on your end.
Yeah, I mean, consolidation is happening, you know, because of, you know, the stats that are coming out, which is that low desire, that low ownership aspiration to own, and with just climbing multiples, it makes it harder for associates to actually own the practice. So I was actually going to touch on this at the early part, and I apologize, I should have mentioned it earlier. It's important that despite sort of climbing multiples and climbing valuations in today's practice, and it feels like practice ownership gets more and more out of reach on that context, remember to have the conversation with your practice owner of even taking a minority stake. And you don't even need your own cash to do it oftentimes. You can do it through payroll deductions, right? Ask the practice owner to say, take $1,000 out of my paycheck a month so I can keep buying into the practice slowly over time. I'm willing to do that. And again, I've acted like an owner this whole time. I've worked with you as if I was an owner the whole time. And certainly I hope I've shown you that I can be a good owner or even a good partner in this. And so let me buy into the practice solely over time through payroll deductions. And honestly, I can't begin to tell you the number of practices that we run into that have associate veterinarians as minority holders. And I think that's a great way to create wealth, a great way to create retirement income. Because even if that practice sells, you now have an exit strategy. You now have cash in your pocket. You can go start your own practice if you wanted to, right? Or stay with that practice for an X amount of time and pay off other debt. So there are opportunities. And I think we're too shy sometimes to ask for that. It's okay to ask. I think it's important to ask in today's market. And there are ways to do it, to even take a minority stake in a lot of these things. In terms of consolidation, that wave is coming. I think there's nothing stopping it. In the U.S. today, we're, you know, under 15% consolidated. We're somewhere between 12 and 15% consolidated. In the U.K., they're at about 70% consolidated. So we are far from what the U.K. is, but the consolidation wave is there and it's coming. And I think it's important to get onto that minority practice ownership, if nothing else. Just bid your way in. Take a small stake, even if it's 5%. It will create wealth. It will create desire in you to have your own practice. I think it's an important thing to do. And more importantly, that will also give you your work-life balance because you're still a 5% owner, right? It's not like you have to take on the entire burden of the organization. You're only a minority stakeholder. And as you do, I think that this is also the important conversation to have. As you take a minority stake, outline the roles and responsibilities as you take that minority stake so that the selling practice owner doesn't feel that, hey, I gave you 5%. You're now responsible for 50% of everything I just did. I just own 5% of this thing, right? Let's keep everything in context. But I think it's important to do that. And don't be afraid of consolidation. It's there, it's coming, and that's okay. I think it's important to be part of that game. I think it's important to be part of it. create wealth for yourself through that process. And if you need to, go start your own practice and then create even more wealth for yourself. There is opportunity here to create that work-life balance as well as create wealth for yourself through this process.
I just know, just from the little bit I got from reading people's comments last night, that there's going to be so many people that have tuned in that their eyes are going to be opened to things that they didn't really know were options. There's this like hard line between not being an owner, you know, like associate versus owner. And I think a lot of us are still stuck in that mindset, and we're completely missing that there's so many different aspects in between that people have at their fingertips to, one, see if they want to own in the first place. And then, you know, two, just take away some of that fear of it.
Yeah. And I, if I can add one more thing to that in terms of the consolidation world that's taking place, oftentimes selling owners won't want to divulge to the associates that they're selling or even thinking about selling because they're afraid that if the associates find out about it, they're all going to flee. Mm-hmm. And I think rather than have that dialogue and have the selling owner be fearful of that conversation, I think it's important to open that conversation up and say, look, we know consolidation is coming in one way, shape, or form. We don't have to sell. That's fine. But if we do sell, can I be part of that conversation, right? Because there are many consolidators out there right now that want a joint venture relationship. Look, a consolidator doesn't want to buy a business and know that all the doctors are going to run away. That's the last thing that they want. In fact, it works against them. Why throw millions of dollars at this and have the doctors run away? And so in fact, work the conversation the other way. Okay, if you're selling, no problem. How can the associates, how can the technicians, how can the receptionists, how can all of those people take advantage of this practice ownership? And there are consolidators out there right now. There's one right now that I'm talking to and working with, VetHaven, right now that is talking about how do we give practice ownership all the way down to the front desk, right? How do we get the customer service people involved? Because truly, if they can get engaged, that's what's going to drive this. And so a big part of our driving force in my vet group is finding the right fit for the selling veterinarian. And what do they ultimately want? And we're building that conversation through. And so there's lots of consolidators out there that are doing this, right? There's plenty in Canada, plenty in the US that are having this dialogue of how do we create this relationship from the customer service people all the way up to the associates and get them engaged. How do we keep them engaged in this process? Because we don't want to throw millions of dollars out there and then have the business go away. That's the last thing we want. So I think it's important to not be afraid of it. I think that's the biggest thing, is have that open dialogue with the owner now before he or she sells and say, look, if you sell, which eventually could be a case, that's fine. Could we be part of that conversation? Could we help steer that conversation so that we all get to benefit as part of that over the success of the organization?
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey, this is Dr. Julio Alonso, and I'm here to tell you about my new show on Pet Candy TV. You can learn all about how to take the best care of your pets. Stream at My Pet Candy 24/7 on YouTube, iTunes, and most other video platforms.
That's awesome advice. And I do think that you touched on a fear, you know, that a lot of people probably have regarding consolidation and what that looks like, you know, in the future. And I also love that you kind of gave a glimpse of what you do with my vet group. And so I always, you know, love to send our listeners off with more information on how to get in touch with you, how to follow you. If you are an owner and you are interested in working with My Vet Group, what does that look like? How can they get in touch with you?
Great. So they can go on our website, myvetgroup.ca, all one word, myvetgroup.ca, or they can email me directly, Raj.Rahija@myvetgroup.ca, and happy to start the conversation. Most often people come to us just because they want a valuation. That's something we do for absolutely free, just so you know, is we do this absolutely free because a big part of what we want to do is give back to the veterinary community. So even if you're a single doctor practice, even if you're a 10 doctor practice, specialty practice, it doesn't matter. We actually just did evaluation on a dairy practice. They just needed help with valuation because they were looking for the associates to buy in. We do valuation work absolutely for free. There's no charge whatsoever. We spend time with you. We spend almost a week really studying your financials and giving you full credit for everything that's going through it. Study your financials, give you your standalone value, tell you what value could be today. You may want to come back in 5 years and say, let's do that again. You will come back every year and let's do that again. We're happy to do it. At some point when you are ready and you do want to sell, great. We put you in a group, much like a GPO, and we present these clinics as a group to a consolidator. And we allow a consolidator to say, okay, we're interested in buying a large amount of profit all at once. And so we're willing to pay more because we're not buying it one at a time, we're buying it 15 at a time. And so we pass that back off to the veterinarians, and they benefit from a higher valuation price, a higher purchase price, by selling as a group. And so that's really what we do at a whole. And we're happy to start that dialogue right off the bat. Or if you just want a valuation done because you need it for your associate vet, or if you need it for an internal purpose or for tax purposes or whatever, we're happy to do that as well.
And for our listeners, since the bulk of our talk was those looking to own, do you have any specific resources that you could point them to with that process?
Yeah. So, you know, get in touch with me or anyone on my team for those people that are looking to purchase clinics that you want to buy. I know they do a lot of advertisements in the vet magazines, but oftentimes we found that the really lucrative ones, the really interesting ones, really come through word of mouth. And so it's important to talk to people that are very tied into the industry, and they can relay your information through and be able to express your desire of practice ownership and find your practice. There are many out there, of course, for sale, and there are many that do want to buy. So we're happy connecting the sellers and the buyers together.
Awesome. I know that this has been such a wealth of knowledge for our listeners, and it's been so much fun getting to talk to you. I know I've learned so much, and I'm excited for our listeners. I think this is just going to allow so many to breathe and dream again if, you know, practice ownership was a dream for them. So thank you so much for being a guest with us, and for our listeners for tuning in. We actually have more talk on finances coming up. So if you enjoyed this call, make sure you tune in for the next one. And just thanks, Raj. It's been a pleasure. I hope to have you on again in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Jessica.
All right, everybody. This is Dr. Jessica, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
It's Vet Candy. Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
It's Vet Candy Radio.